You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And Mahomes will do it himself, a quarterback keeper, and that is more than enough for a fresh set of downs. It'll be first and goal inside the five.
And he is laying on top of one of the offensive linemen, and it looks like he is hurt. He is the injured player. He is in a lot of pain, Ian.
Mahomes just ripped off his helmet, and they are checking the right leg of Patrick Mahomes. Serious concern right now for the NFL MVP.
Westwood 1 is where that audio came from, a game you heard right here last night on Sports Radio 610. The Kansas City Chiefs beat the Denver Broncos, the brakes off the Denver Broncos last night. That two-game winning streak was fun, Denver, I'll bet, huh? So the Chiefs get back in the win column last night, 30-6 over the Broncos. But the big story from that game, Patrick Mahomes, whose knee injury was occurring at almost the exact same time as George Springer, severely injuring the Yankees' chances of winning the ALCS in the third inning. There were two things going on. It's always interesting to be on Twitter when there are two things going on like that, because, mm-hmm. of course, my timeline, Seth, is flooded with Springer dinger.
Yeah.
Oh, Springer, hit a bomb. You know, all these Springer this. And then I've got people who aren't in Houston that I follow, who are a lot of football people, who, let's face it, they're probably watching the Thursday night game.
I kind of had forgotten that there was even Thursday night football last night.
I did too, we're in Houston, so that's logical. But then it was funny because my Twitter timeline on TweetDeck was Springer dinger, Springer, and with woven in like, oh no,
yeah,
not Patrick,
yeah,
oh God,
it was,
oh no,
not Patrick.
And then he walked off the field,
and then because he dislocated his kneecap, which could go many, many different ways. It could be just a few weeks. It could be surgery that would be season-ending, but it seems like they're relatively optimistic about this. I don't know if he's had a history. I've known players who had chronically dislocating kneecaps, and it's disgusting. Because you look over, and
that's a thing.
They'll say ah, and you look over and you think, oh, he's facing one direction, but his kneecap's staring me right in the face, and that's gross. But it becomes almost no big deal. So I don't know if it's something that's happened to him before, and he's just got a loose kneecap, or if he's got structural damage that just happened. It's a vast mystery exactly how it'll all end.
It is. We'll know more today. Ian Rappaport tweeted this morning. He said, heading into the all important MRI today, here is where it stands for Chiefs QB Patrick Mahomes. He's expected to be out at least 3 weeks with a dislocated kneecap, but there is some real optimism from those involved that he can play through the ailment after that. Now, keep in mind, Patrick Mahomes tweeted last night after the game at 11:01. He tweeted this, awesome team win. Love my brothers. Thank you for all the prayers. Everything looking good so far. Hashtag God is good. Hashtag Chiefs kingdom. So he tweeted that last night.
What did he say? Everything's good so far? Yeah. You might add, I'd be surprised if he didn't have the MRI already.
Everything looking good so far. That's what he said. And pass the ketchup.
You can't trust the athlete himself in these situations because you're irrationally optimistic a lot of the time. It served him well to be optimistic in his life.
Was 11 at 11:01 p.m. last night, would it have been logical that the adrenaline is still flowing a little bit too?
Yeah.
My guess is he woke up in great, great pain this morning.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, it's one of these injuries that's different every single time with different people. So sometimes there's a lot of swelling, sometimes there's not.
The bottom line that's not getting mentioned with this knee, I mean, it's getting mentioned, but we haven't mentioned yet at least, is that he's already dealing with a left ankle injury. So now he's got a right kneecap dislocation and a left ankle injury.
Yeah, if anything, people acting like they're upset that Mahomes got injured really haven't been paying attention the last couple of weeks. I don't know if they've noticed, but Mahomes hasn't been all that brilliant or electric the last couple of weeks. Maybe him injuring his knee and giving his ankle some time to rest might be just what the doctor ordered, and he ends up coming back fine and 4 or 5 weeks.
The whole thing could be a God blessing.
Yeah, it's like inadvertent load management. It's like Correa coming alive right this moment. Look, nobody got load managed more than Correa during the season because he had injuries. Sometimes these injuries are blessings in disguise.
Mm-hmm.
You just, the rest of your body recuperates and rests, and as long as his back stays up, all of a sudden, Correa's going to be hitting 3-run homers every damn night.
So what is look, the Texans already beat the Chiefs in Kansas City last weekend. If Patrick Mahomes is out for any extended period of time, Seth, what's the optimism level like now? For obviously there's a huge game this weekend with the Colts, but let's pretend for a second that the Texans go into Indy and they beat the Colts. You've got a Texans team then that would be 5-2,
mm-hmm.
have a what a two game lead in the or a game and a half lead in the AFC South. You've already won the road game in Indianapolis, so the next Colts game would be at home. Now that same thing played out last year, and it didn't work out so well for the Texans. But I think the Texans are a better team this year than they were last year, at least through six games. That's how it looks. If the Texans win this game on Sunday and you've got a Patrick Mahomes that at the very least is banged up and is going to miss a month or so, what all of a sudden becomes the ceiling for the Houston Texans?
I think that you're looking at potentially a two seed, depending on what happens with the Patriots and a head-to-head matchup there and whatnot. But I think realistically, I think most people would look at the last couple games and say, wow, you made some progress offensively and that's awesome, but we need to see what you do versus a good defense. And we need to see if the defense itself, especially with both its starting cornerbacks injured right now. It's weird. We haven't talked much about the Texans this week because the Astros have been obviously the main focus. You've got two starting cornerbacks injured, you know? That's a big deal. You can disguise Lonnie Johnson and Phillip Gaines a little bit when it happens by surprise in the course of one game with Roby getting injured. But with teams having an entire week to game plan, things start to get a little bit dicey. So there's more and more pressure on the pass rushers up front to help those guys out. But I would say realistically, given all that, I'm giving you the dose of reality. Given all that, given the fact that the AFC is not a very impressive conference right this moment.
No.
You look at just DVOA and some of the advanced stats, the top 10 other than New England, it's all NFC. You know, until you get down to really Baltimore and Houston and
New England, obviously.
I'm saying outside of New England.
Outside
New England's
New England.
At the
Sorry,
very yeah. top. So yeah, it's very possible. It's very achievable.
Yeah.
I don't like thinking about it right this moment. I feel like I need three more games before I realistically start allowing myself to think about a two seed.
That's fine. Well, the good news is the next three games are all winnable games. Indianapolis this weekend. I think the Texans, I feel confident that they're going to go into Indy and win that game.
Well,
Oakland comes here in week 8, and then you go to London to play Jacksonville in week 9, and then you got a bye week. Those are three very winnable games.
Well, I'd say every single game they have on their schedule for the rest of the season is very winnable other than the Patriots.
Yeah, well, it's the NFL. Yeah,
but it's also the AFC.
Yeah.
The AFC sucks this year.
Yeah.
It's just flat out so far. Now, The Ravens are intriguing, and they're still a work in progress in a way that I feel like the defense has underperformed to some extent, and I think that you still need to see a full season out of Lamar Jackson. What's this going to look like by the end of the season? And, you know, what are the things that really give Lamar Jackson trouble? You tend to find out more and more as young quarterbacks move along.
Here's what Kansas City has over the next 4 weeks. Unfortunately for them, their bye week is until week 12. A week 12 bye week for Kansas City. So there's no, you know, unlike the Texans, say, with Bradley Roby, where you go, okay, well, he's got a hamstring, but you got your bye week coming up within the framework of that, of the recovery for that injury. If this is a 3 or 4 week injury for Patrick Mahomes, he's going to miss games in all 3 or 4 of those weeks. Here's the schedule. Oddly enough, they play two NFC North teams in the next couple games, Seth. They have a Sunday night game. They have a Sunday night game a week from this Sunday because they just played last night. So they get 10 days off. Their next game is Sunday the 27th, Sunday night football against the Green Bay Packers, who are 5-1 right now. They then have a home game the following Sunday against Minnesota, who's not a good road team. They then travel to Tennessee, which should be a very winnable game for them, even with Matt Moore at quarterback, the way Tennessee's playing right now. And then you host the Chargers in week 11. Those are their next four games before their bye week. Who knows about the Chargers, right? I mean, they're 2-4 right now. If they win a few games between now and then, maybe the Chargers are in that mode where we could save our season with a win in Kansas City. I guess the good news for Kansas City, three of the next four games are at home. The bad news is you're playing a couple pretty good teams along the way. And like you said, the NFL, outside of a few teams, is so even this year that – you know, if you're Kansas City, removing Patrick Mahomes from this situation, you could be on the level of a Tennessee all of a sudden traveling to Nashville.
And I think even the teams that look dominant or the teams that look like the real deal in the NFC, I can't look at San Francisco right this moment as impressive as they've been and still say like, oh yeah, this will last. This is for real. This is going to be fine by the end of the season. But they've looked way better than just about everybody else.
That's interesting. You're right. The overall records of the better teams in the NFC are really, really good. They, like the NFC West, I mean, the Rams are third in that division right now. They're 3-3. Two of the best four or five teams in football are in that division right now with Seattle and with San Francisco. I think Seattle's 5-1 right now. Of those teams in the NFC right now, Seth, like how you just mentioned San Francisco, you're not totally buying into them.
Well,
like Green Bay is 5-1.
Look at San Francisco's record. They looked impressive doing it, but they beat the Bucs, they beat the Bengals, they beat the Steelers. And then when they faced the Steelers, was that which game was that? Was Roethlisberger?
It was Mason Rudolph.
No, that was Mason Rudolph. Yeah, that's right. The Browns. The Rams, I mean, they put it on the Rams, but I don't know what the hell's going on in the Rams right now. Their offensive line sucks. Don't worry, they don't have any draft picks in the future. And then this week they take on the Redskins. So
we're not going to learn much about them.
Right. And I think they're a good team. I just don't know how good.
Right.
We need to flush this immediately, because, we talked about as a team, we need to get over this in a hurry and come put our best foot forward tomorrow. And, now, stranger things have certainly happened, a lot stranger. And we need to play a cleaner game, obviously, if we're going to beat a team like that. But we did not get it done tonight.
This is a really fun time right now, not just because the Houston Astros are the team that's beating up the New York Yankees, that's turning their manager into just this depressed pile of tears that we just heard right there. It's cool that it's our team that's doing it. It's awesome that it's our team that's doing it. But as a sports fan, and I think we can all relate both in this studio and if you're listening, if you're not a Yankee fan, pretty much anybody outside of a Yankee fan, if you're anybody in that subset of sports fans, the late 90s was a nightmare of a time for us. The Yankees won four world championships, and it felt like everything that the Astros have been doing this series and did in 2017 were things that the Yankees were doing that whole 4 or 5 year period. Like anytime you needed a big hit, there was Scott Brosius with a home run or Bernie Williams or Tino Martinez or certainly Jeter, guys like that. The Yankees are not that team. Right now they are the team that is looking across the diamond at the other team going, these guys are just going to get hits every time they need it. And even these guys who are batting .133 like Springer in this series is going to, whenever he finally does get a home run, it's going to be a timely home run that hits us right in the face at the worst possible time. And I will give George Springer credit for that. He not only hits a lot of home runs in the postseason, but it feels like there is some serious context to every home run that George Springer hits. He hit the solo homer earlier in the series, and then the one last night. Look, that was a game, Seth, that Zach Greinke was scuffling early in the game. The crowd was into it. We're going to talk about these Yankee fans in just a second. The crowd was into it. Like, you could sense even through the television how raucous that atmosphere was. Springer popped the balloon, man, with that three-run homer.
The dropped fly ball was a big thing. I was just thinking about the fan reaction, everything in the wind. But when
early in the game,
you brought up the fans and the crowd, and that kind of added to the fuel.
You're talking about the one where Correa had his back to the infield, and it fell. You're talking about the Yankee one that fell.
It was the whole thing about it is seven game series. Look, if the Rays had been a seven game series, I think the same thing would have happened that's happening now. Is if the Astros get enough looks at the pitchers, everything starts to add up and the hitters start hitting a little bit better. And I think right from the very beginning last night, I had a really good feeling about it because guys were making hard contact initially. Those first couple innings, guys are making hard contact. And you've learned enough from the damn nerds these days that hard contact, you got to look at hard contact almost like it's a hit.
Yeah.
All right. Sometimes the shift was working out really well for the Yankees. That's a thought I had during the game last night was, is there anybody that complains about the shift anymore? I feel like you see it work so much that the time that it screws you, you've seen it work so much, both for you and against you as a hitter. It worked for you when you're fielding, and it's worked against you when your team's batting. That I don't think anybody really minds anymore, do they? Other than how it's destroying baseball. Everybody into just wanting to hit home runs all the time.
I mean, you're sad. Like, I don't like it, but I'm not vocal about it. It's not something I feel strongly about.
You don't like it, but you admit that it works.
Of course.
Right. No, yeah. I'm saying there are people that used to want to argue that it didn't work.
Yeah.
I don't think I've heard that in a couple years.
No, there's more and more teams doing it. So just intuitively, it must be working because these teams have these staffs of nerds, like you just said. boy, I mean, if it weren't working, you've got a bunch of teams that are trial and erroring something really stupid right now.
But it was one of those things when teams like the Astros started doing it a whole bunch. Because you don't, because people didn't like it, every time it didn't work, they would say, yeah, you see, it's stupid, it's dumb, there you go.
Yeah.
And all the times that it does work, it kind of is a routine, it ends up looking like a routine play.
Right.
Same goes for the outfield, too.
Yeah.
You know, Mariznick gets screwed over in some sometimes because he doesn't get as much credit as he probably should because the outfield alignment has already put him in better position. So it just... I say screwed over, like Mariznick. Like he should be an all-star or something. He should be. If there's a defensive specialist all-star team, Mariznick should damn well be out
there.
How
great would that be? In the all-star game.
Win the Golden Glove based on 2 innings of work every...
in the all-star game, they're bringing in Mariznick as a defensive replacement because he's so good at that.
That's the equivalent of a reliever going into the Hall of Fame.
That's yeah. Same exact thing. All right, so let's count up the reasons why Yankee fans should be completely embarrassed by their team and their performance as fans in this series. This might be the most embarrassing performance by a fan base in the history of postseason baseball. Number one, they and their players are bitching about the Astros possibly stealing signs and whistling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a thing. The storied Yankee franchise with 27 titles is citing something that's not even illegal as one of the big reasons why they're losing this series right now.
Well, the stealing signs, they would say, is illegal because they would assume anytime they were complaining about stealing signs, it's because they would be using electronic devices to do it.
Right.
So that's what they're complaining about. But then also, but they're not actually even out loud complaining about that. What they're complaining about is the fact that they would relay the information through whistling. That's the big deal. The whistling they don't like.
Yeah. The means of communicating. All right, that's number one. Fans were allegedly taunting Zach Greinke last night when he was doing his bullpen before the game with social anxiety taunts.
Yeah, and talking about his family, too.
He's talking about his mom, I guess,
specific family members,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I wonder, I need to know that, though, because Reddick said the fans in right field actually know his mom and his wife's name, and they bring that up. Whereas with Greinke, this report from NJ something, New Jersey something, says that they were bringing up his family. It's different. If you say somebody's mom's name versus just saying your mama, if it's your mama,
oh, for sure,
like
much
hey,
more personal.
Hey, Greinke, I was with your mom last night, something like that. Okay, all right, you let it slide. That's not actually the specificity of a mom joke is where it crosses the line.
No doubt about that.
Now it's good. That's right. That's
now,
when you know you gotta.
Let's not ignore the 800-pound gorilla of social anxiety talks.
Oh yeah, that part. Yeah, I'm making fun of a disability potentially. Yeah,
right.
That's beyond the pale. They removed one guy.
Yes. Did you see that guy, by the way? Did you see the picture
of
him?
No.
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, he looks like the classic Yankee fan who was like, what?
What am I doing?
I'm just out here making fun of some anxiety, eh?
Yeah.
Forget about it.
If he didn't want me made fun of, he shouldn't have had the condition.
That's right.
Oh.
He should be more comfortable in social situations, eh?
Yeah.
So there's that. AJ Hinch actually addressed this. Yankee fans throwing stuff at his players. Hinch said before the game last night that if that were to happen again, because it happened in game three, if it happened again, he would just pull his team off the field.
Yeah, well, I went out on the field the other day. I wanted the umpires to know that it was becoming a dangerous situation. Our guys had reported both in the bullpen and, you know, in the outfield. You could see the stuff thrown on the field. And there's no place for that. Both teams will agree. And it's really hard to stop fans from doing that, but it's also very dangerous. So, you know, MLB is aware, we're aware. I will pull the team off the field if we get in that situation again to where bottles are being thrown and balls are being thrown and it becomes unruly. There's other ways to support your home team, and this place does as good a job as anybody at trying to police that while also trying to create an environment that's all pro-Yankee. So it would be a very ugly scene for baseball, a very ugly scene for the Yankees. If one of our guys was hit by something from the upper deck, you know, something tragic could happen, and nobody wants that.
They do actually sell cans of beer at Yankee Stadium for local craft beers. One of our listeners sent us a picture of it.
Okay.
Somebody tried to claim that Reddick must have been telling a lie about them throwing cans of beer on the field because they don't sell cans of beer at that stadium. So I actually received a couple pictures of cans. So whatever it's worth.
I've been to that stadium.
Yeah.
They sell cans of beer.
If you think that a three-quarters, however much beer the can would lose on its way down, because you know they pop it open for you, a three-quarters full can of beer hitting an outfielder without who's not wearing a helmet, obviously, in the head.
Yeah, that would
do some damage.
Yeah.
You know, like Jeff Nelson, that poor umpire that left the game with the
concussion.
Yeah,
what did you think of their concussion protocol, baseball's concussion protocol with their umps the other day?
I thought
day?
It was very 1972. It was, because they had it mic'd up.
Yeah.
I don't think you, could you hear it or not when you were watching? I thought you were somewhere, you were in a sports bar, weren't you?
But no, they, that was the game we watched up here, wasn't it?
Was it? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
so they played the audio of the guys. Oh, I was thinking you might have been on the radio at the time.
No.
They played the audio and it was just, it was like, hey, buddy, how you feeling? I think I feel all right. Okay, sounds good
enough.
Here we go.
Yeah. Pat him on the butt,
later,
send him back behind the home plate.
They didn't even like shine a light in his eyes or nothing.
Right.
So there's that. Yeah. I like that there's still like this feels like some of the stories you've heard about the Cleveland Browns stadium back in the day, Municipal Stadium, where it was just out of control.
Yeah.
Haywire.
So bitching about whistling.
Yeah.
Taunting Greinke with social anxiety taunts, throwing stuff at players, about to be the Astros' biatch for the third time in five
postseasons. Well, in three out of four playoff appearances.
Right.
The Yankees didn't make it in 2016, I don't think.
Nor did the Astros.
So yeah. Right, but I'm saying the Yankees' postseason appearances, they've gotten knocked out by
in three
the
of
Astros
their last four.
Potentially,
yeah.
As long as the Astros pull this off. Yeah, three of the last four appearances.
Yep. And I would say also, Yankees, that now that you, the mighty Yankees of the $200 million payroll, whatever it is, that you're now a bullpen-driven, over-managing, rich man's version of the Tampa Bay Rays has got to be a little embarrassing as well, I would say.
Yeah, that you're...
You just don't line up three big starters like you did back in the day and just overpower teams?
Not so big and bad.
No.
You're not even... They don't even know how to be a bully.
That's
this
right.
Is like watching the. This is like watching that kid in the Christmas Story get beat up every day.
That's right.
On his home. But this is different. This is like if Ralphie had gone to the bully's home and beat him up on his own porch. Like, I want your mom to see what a punk you are. That's what we're doing.
Thing.
We're beating up the Yankees on their home porch.
It's the exact same thing.
Well, you know what? Early on, he would pull the ball and run that option a little bit, not running quite as much option. But I think he has a good command of the offense where the receivers are and get the ball to the receivers that are open.
That's Romeo Crennel talking about Colts starting quarterback Jacoby Brissett. God, whenever I think of Jacoby Brissett running some sort of option play, I think about that start that he had against the Texans when he was a rookie, week three of the 2016 season against Brock Osweiler and the Texans, where the Texans just never got out of first gear. The game was up in New England. It was a Thursday night. If you talk to people who were with the team, it was like a two-hour trip to the stadium because of the traffic going into Foxborough. It was just one of those wonky nights that just completely went sideways on the Texans. Everybody assumed the Texans were going to win that game because there was no Tom Brady. There was no Jimmy Garoppolo. They were down to rookie Jacoby Brissett, and I think they beat him. I think 27-0 was the final score. And the exclamation point on that game, Seth, was an option run by Jacoby Brissett for like a 30-yard touchdown to seal the deal. Here's Romeo Crennel on Jacoby Brissett, and now that he's become more of a pocket passer, how hard he is to bring down in the pocket.
Not quite as much, thank goodness, but he does still have them. And he's hard to bring down in the pocket. People can get their arms around him, but he shrugs them off a lot of times and avoids sacks.
So there you go, Romeo Crennel's assessment. What's your fear level of Jacoby Brissett?
I fear it's more of the two-headed, furry, cute monster of Frank Reich and Jacoby Brissett.
Okay.
It's the way that they're
doesn't
managing
it. Doesn't sound like you're scared of them at all when you're calling them furry and cute.
Well, no, kind of like, oh wow, that's a furry creature. You know, let's see, which animal would be like that where people might think, oh wow, what a big furry creature, it's so cute. I guess like a bison, maybe.
Okay.
You look at a bison, somebody might think, oh, it's just a big cow,
walk
right?
Walk up and pet this bison.
Yeah, and then that bison gores you to death and
runs
tramples
you
all over.
Right.
Yeah, bison will, they'll mess you up big time. So I fear that. I fear that they do a pretty good job of managing a quarterback that doesn't necessarily have as many weapons as you'd expect to see. There's the whole problem, like we were talking about earlier with the AFC in general this year, is trying to figure out who's actually good and how good are they. And the Texans are right in that boat. The Texans might be the second best team in the AFC right now, but we're not so sure about that because the teams that they've beaten also seem to be weakened. The whole AFC is just kind of down right now.
And this is what I would point out to people who are making sweeping assessments of teams 6 weeks in. And we're probably as guilty of it as anybody because we're sitting here talking about what this game means to the Texans big picture. Look, of any city, we should be plugged in and sensitive to the fact that look at last season, right? I mean, the Texans started 0-3. They won 9 straight games. After week 3 of the season, nobody was saying the Texans are a playoff team. Yeah. The Colts started the season 1-5. They won a playoff game here, a road playoff game. The Ravens won 6 of their last 7 games to get into the playoffs. The Cowboys started the season 1-5. Seattle won a bunch of games to get into the playoffs. If you're looking for reasons why maybe making gigantic overarching assessments of teams at this stage of the season is just folly, just look at last year, man. Like, half the teams that made the playoffs were abysmal in the middle of October.
The weird thing about the Colts right now, and it's just so much different than anything you're accustomed to, is you just look at the yards per reception of some of their receivers. Like T.Y. Hilton, 9.7 yards per catch.
Yeah.
That's T.Y. Hilton, who's usually 15 yards per catch, just an extreme deep threat, and it's not feeling that way. And you go down there's not a single guy on their team that's averaging more than 10 yards per catch.
Are you serious?
Not a single one. Jack Doyle, 9.1. Well, Eric Ebron at 15.1, but he's got 9 catches. So, you know, Eric Ebron is that same classic. What it was last year, I think sometimes people got a little excited about Eric Ebron more than they should have because Eric Ebron was being used like a basketball player in the post more than anything.
Down in the red zone.
Yeah. He would use his size and whatnot. But just like we saw versus the Texans, you try to use him in the middle of the field, and 50% of the time he's going to bat the ball down like it's a volleyball or something.
Right.
He's not actually trying to – it doesn't even look like he's trying to catch the ball.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, Eric Ebron, like Chester Rogers has 6 catches. He's averaging 12 yards. But their top receivers, T.Y. Hilton has 9.7 yards per catch. Nyheim Hines there has 6.7 yards per catch. Jack Doyle, 9.1 yards per catch.
Oh, God.
They're not an explosive passing offense. It's Marlon Mack. Now, this is why – so you asked, should I be scared of Jacoby Brissett?
Right.
I don't think you certainly need to respect Jacoby Brissett.
Okay.
But I think especially given what the Texans last saw from the Colts, you need to worry about Marlon Mack. And Marlon Mack, who's – churning away yardage just like he did last year. He got shut down in the playoffs the week after tearing out the hearts of the Texans.
Yeah, right.
But let's remember Marlon Mack went off against the Texans when last year the Texans had an excellent rush defense.
Yeah.
This year the rush defense at times has looked stout, and in matchups it's been okay. It's been adequate, but it's not nearly what it was last year. That, by the way, is one thing that annoys me a little bit when people talk about how, oh, losing Clowney hasn't hurt at all. Clowney as a run stuffer and like the force he was on the edge and how that affected what teams could do in getting to the perimeter, and that also affects their passing game. The Texans are missing that right now. Clowney was, and you can bring up, okay, hey, the Colts game last year, Clowney, shoot, okay, let's go down the defensive players that didn't have good games. A good game against the Colts in the playoffs. Let's see. All of them.
I was about to say, I had like 3 names I was going to jump in, but yeah.
But
they were terrible.
That was the really frustrating thing about the Colts loss last year in the playoffs, was that guys that I trust implicitly to go out and play well in big games, and I would include Clowney in that. Clowney's had some really good big primetime games.
Sure.
They just didn't show up.
Yeah.
That whole defense just looked completely out of sorts.
Big time. Of all the numbers you just went through right there, the one that scares me the most is the T.Y. Hilton 9.7 yards per catch. And I know it's not Andrew Luck pulling the trigger. I know in years past, go look at T.Y. Hilton's stats against the Texans. He's basically performed at an all-pro level. If he just played the Texans all the time, he would be talked about like alongside Jerry Rice and Randy Moss.
Yeah.
He's been ridiculously good statistically against the Texans. It feels like a lot of those T.Y. Hilton games, I don't have the game logs in front of me to back it up with, remember this one, I'm just talking about the feeling sitting in the press box or watching on TV, the Colts. I feel like there's been a lot of these Colts games where they've come in and you look at it and you go, well, T.Y. Hilton in his last 3 games, he hasn't really done much. And then he comes in here, and by the middle of the second quarter, he's got 95 yards receiving.
Mm-hmm.
That's what scares me of all the numbers you just said the most, Seth, is 9.7 yards per catch for T.Y. Hilton, because the regression to the mean is coming. He's, even in an offense that's dink and dunk and little short passes and running the football, T.Y. Hilton's not going to average 9.7 yards a catch for the whole year.
I think if the Texans' secondary were healthy, I'd feel more confident than in most years, just because you could easily say, okay, well, you're going to go out and you're going to help whoever's on T.Y. Hilton. You're going to make up for it that way. But now you're in a situation where if you have Phillip Gaines and Lonnie Johnson both on the outside, Phillip Gaines has limitations as a player, and Lonnie Johnson has limitations as a rookie. You know,
yes.
Now Lonnie Johnson came up huge in the second to last series last week. Lonnie was one-on-one on that deep ball with zero safety
Robinson,
over the top against Robinson, and Lonnie came up and made a great play on that. So Lonnie's doing some really good things. There are other times where he makes rookie mistakes. So against a guy like T.Y. Hilton, that's what you get nervous. Now, they're not going to leave Lonnie with zero safety help over the top with covering T.Y. Hilton, I don't think. I would imagine that they won't do that.
I doubt that. All right,
and speaking of just on the flip side, Will Fuller and DeAndre Hopkins and everything, what they're going to do versus the Colts. I'm having a hard time figuring out exactly what's going on with the Colts defense here, because they have extreme athleticism. They've been banged up with injuries a little bit, but they're not playing all that great as a defense. There are opportunities here for the Texans tomorrow or Sunday, and I'm feeling pretty good about it. Also, just after watching Clint Sterner last night do his Stern talk.
Yeah.
We did that before the Astros game. We had Clint in here. We had a bunch of listeners up, and Clint just broke down some plays. It was really cool to watch and see. But it was really cool to see him break down a couple of the Will Fuller drops and how
he catches those.
Well, yes, but that also on those plays, it was likely a Deshaun Watson misreading the coverage more than it was Will Fuller. Those catches were difficult because Fuller read the safety correctly, mm-hmm. and Deshaun didn't put the ball where Will Fuller expected it to be.
Interesting.
So the one where he got flipped around. Well, for one, that play where Fuller got flipped around and had to go from looking over his left shoulder to his right shoulder, that ball should have been over his left shoulder.
So that we shouldn't have blamed that one on Fuller.
Yeah, these are things that happened, but it wasn't. He should catch it because it hit him in the chest, but it also wasn't where he expected it to be.
All right, let's do some headlines, Jonesy.
That ball's drilled to left field. It sends Gardner back at the wall. It's gone. A three-run shot from George Springer, and the Yankees fall behind 3-1.
Yankees fall behind 3-1 on the scoreboard last night. They also fall behind 3-1 in the series. 3-1, the Astros lead the Yankees now after an 8-3 win last night in Yankee Stadium. 2 3-run home runs, one by George Springer early, one by Carlos Correa in the sixth, and then the bullpen comes in, and other than a Josh James 2-run home run, how scared did you get in the bottom of the sixth inning after the Astros had opened up a 6-1 lead when Josh James came in and promptly put a guy on base and then allowed a home run to the light-hitting Gary Sanchez?
I'd like to tell you that I wasn't scared at all, but I'm not a liar most of the time.
But prison is no fairy tale world, as Morgan Freeman said in Shawshank.
Oh, of course, but that's the situation you're going to... That's how I'm going to feel. Let's see. Yeah, that's how you're going to feel whenever... This is the beauty of getting into the playoffs, and Smoltz touched on it last night, where no matter how good a hitting team you are, you're going to get it in the playoffs and you're going to face some really good pitchers. Likewise, no matter how good you feel about any individual reliever, and we know that Josh James is a Jekyll and Hyde pitcher, but I don't care who I would have up there. If I got if I had Aroldis Chapman on my team and I was winning, I'm still going to be scared as hell the entire time he's up there because it's the playoffs.
Yeah.
These are the best teams in Major League Baseball going at each other.
Justin Verlander tonight. We will talk plenty about that for the last couple hours of the show. Game 5 tonight, 6:08 first pitch.
And Mahomes will do it himself, a quarterback keeper, and that is more than enough for a fresh set of downs. It'll be first and goal inside the 5.
And he is laying on top of one of the offensive linemen, and it looks like he is hurt. He is the injured player. He is in a lot of pain, Ian.
Mahomes just ripped off his helmet, and they are checking the right leg of Patrick Mahomes. Serious concern right now for the NFL MVP.
It looked more serious than it wound up looking shortly thereafter. We don't know how serious it's going to be, but Patrick Mahomes, a dislocated kneecap last night. It looked like, Seth, they popped back in place on the field.
Yeah, I don't like thinking about it. I just, I know because I played with a kid in high school that used to get a dislocated kneecap quite regularly. He had like
I had no idea that that was something that was chronic.
If you have something, if your kneecap's supposed to track a certain way, and whatever the ligaments and tendons that are supposed to keep it on track, sometimes they're not working properly or they're a little loose, so your kneecap can dislocate. So sometimes when it happens, it's because you tore something and it's a longer recovery. Sometimes it's just that's kind of the way your knee is built. So I guess what you would hope here is that Mahomes' knee is just kind of built that way and it's not that big a deal. He was able to dislocate it with a lot of the damage. Same way like a shoulder dislocation. Sometimes you dislocate it and it's not necessarily as big a deal. Other times you dislocate it and you got to restructure the whole thing.
They were going to bring a cart out to bring him off the field. He wound up walking off the field,
yeah.
Jogging off the field under his own power. He'll have an MRI today.
First time I ever saw it, I was at wrestling camp with my high school team.
First time you ever saw a patellar dislocation?
Yeah, and Sean O'Day we were running down the hall, beating the crap out of each other, doing some kind of, we were playing some kind of game, and all of a sudden his kneecap was completely on the side of his leg. And
was it your fault?
No, it wasn't my fault, but I would have been one of the people that should go get help, and this is to this day.
What did you do?
How some 30-some years later, I'm still deeply ashamed of myself. I lost it. I freaked out. I started screaming, "Get a trainer!" You know, in my prepubescent voice, "Get a trainer! Get a trainer!" There's two times I'm ashamed of from my youth. There's that time, and then there was another time I was at a Pop Warner game, and there was a shooter scare.
Yeah.
Somebody spotted a guy with a gun in the bushes, so they shut out all the lights, and we were on the track with blankets over us, which I don't know, like maybe to make a larger target for the shooter. I don't know what the blanket was supposed to do. We're going to fool the shooter into thinking that there's not.
They're going to shoot at that blanket over there.
Maybe the bullet won't penetrate this heavy wool. I don't know. This is cotton poly plant.
Yeah, shooting, like, maybe shooting ping pong balls.
Yeah, like young obnoxious Seth was like, "What do you got, Kevlar or something? If this blanket ain't Kevlar, I don't want it on me." But I honestly, the fact, as terrified as I was there, I was always a little ashamed of myself that I didn't like act more heroic. I don't know what I would do. Now that I'm talking it out right this moment, I feel better. I don't know what a 10-year-old boy was supposed to do there, but I felt like in my mind I should have done something heroic.
All right, the third.
This has been a very cleansing moment.
It has you. Been, which is why we issued the third headline, which was Adam Silver being demanded by the Chinese to fire Daryl Morey. Even though Daryl Morey doesn't work for Adam Silver. That's what I thought was funny about that. "Hey, you need to fire Daryl Morey." And Adam Silver's like, "He didn't work for me. He works for Tillman Fertitta." We'll get to the Rockets in the 8 o'clock. At 8:20, we will get to the Rockets, mostly because South Park clowned LeBron James. So we'll do that in the 8 o'clock hour at 8:20. Yeah, that was headlines.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.